Hello, I'm Michelle Grattan, and this is the Conversations Politics Podcast. This week, we've had the budget that launches the election. Now we're just waiting for that election to be formally called by the Prime Minister at the weekend. After that, it will be an 8-week campaign, hectic and gruelling for Malcolm Turnbull and Bill Shorten, before polling day on July 2. We caught up with the Prime Minister in his Parliament House office on the last day of this Parliament. Malcolm Turnbull, thank you for talking with us today. When you became Prime Minister, many Australians invested a good deal of hope in you. They were looking for a new style of politics, and now some have been reassessing their thinking. Why, as we go into this election campaign, should people feel that that investment in you was a wise one?
What I'm delivering is an economic plan, a long-term economic plan, brought together in the budget that will ensure that we have strong growth in our economy and strong growth in jobs. The budget sets that out. It sets out the way in which we're going to ensure that we are able to take advantage of the great opportunities of the 21st century.
What makes this a distinctively Turnbull budget? You said a while ago that your government was different from the Abbott government. What is different from what a budget would have otherwise looked like if there'd been no change?
Well, that's a matter for you, Michelle, to deal with the hypotheticals. All I can talk about is what is in this budget, in the budget that my government has delivered and that was handed down so well by Scott Morrison on Tuesday night. What this budget does is back Australians. It backs the enterprise of Australians. It ensures that we will have, over 10 years, an enterprise tax cut that will result in more jobs and more investment. It ensures that we have relief for middle-income tax earners. It ensures that young Australians who are unemployed will have a better pathway, literally a path, to employment through the internship, the preparation, trial, hire program that we've set out. Right across the board in the budget, you see every measure. And of course, in our achievements and our policies prior to the budget, everything we're doing is driving jobs and growth. The big trade deals in Asia, opening up big markets. Our investment in advanced manufacturing in Australia to ensure our defence forces have the capabilities they need. Our innovation agenda. Everything is focused on ensuring that we continue to transition successfully from the mining construction boom to a more diverse economy, a 21st century economy with great jobs and strong growth.
You've mentioned your enterprise taxing changes. You've also made big changes in superannuation. Is this the end of the tax reform story for the next few years, or is more work needed in that area?
Well, we certainly are not going to take any further changes to superannuation to the election. And of course, major changes to superannuation should always be taken to an election. But can I say to you, these are very big changes to superannuation. There is no doubt about that. They only affect a very small percentage, a few percent of income earners and indeed people with superannuation accounts. What it does is make the system fairer and more flexible and more fit for purpose.
The changes to company tax over a decade are estimated to increase GDP by 1%. But it's a bit vague when that dividend would be fully reached. Can you clarify that?
Well, I can't go beyond what has been set out in the budget, but can I say to you that it is definitely a long-term change, and it is accepted. I mean, Chris Bowen wrote a book not so long ago in which he asserted common sense that a cut to company tax will increase investment, employment, and of course economic growth and jobs. So it is that is very well understood because it increases the return on investment, and so people will do more of it. It is a it is also important that Australia's company tax is more competitive. We have a relatively high company tax, and we are in global competition for capital. So all Australians will benefit from a more competitive company tax, and that's why that is the consensus of of the economists. And I think it's what something that Australians understand. Of course, we are front-ending this reform so that the companies that benefit from it first are smaller firms, and there is a strong economic rationale for that, because they have the, being smaller, they have the ability to react faster. So small firms will be faster to increase investment, increase employment. They are by their nature entrepreneurial, and of course we're talking about in the first year of our plan, we're talking about businesses that employ 3.4 million Australians, so it is a very large section of our workforce.
At the last election, a lot of the debate was about debt and deficit. Are you disappointed that you haven't been able to do more this time in budget repair? And how much do deficits really matter?
Well, deficits matter a great deal, and that's why we are seeking to, and we will, we're bringing it down. As you know, over the forward estimates, over the next 4 years, the deficit will come down to around $6 billion. And then after that, if you look at the medium-term outlook in the budget papers, you'll see the budget moving into balance.
Which over is the horizon.
Yeah, past the 4 years, that's right. But it is once the budget returns to balance, and the aim obviously is to achieve a surplus, that we will then start to, debt will start to repay debt.
The rating agencies reportedly are holding their fire at the moment till they go through the budget in fine detail. Are you confident that Australia will retain its AAA rating into the future?
Well, Michelle, I am confident that Australia deserves to retain its AAA rating because we have strong economic management. We have a national economic plan that will drive jobs and growth, and the most effective way to address issues of debt and deficit is strong economic growth, because clearly if you can get the budget back into balance, which is what we are on track to do, then as your economy grows, the debt that you have as a share of your economy as GDP starts to shrink, and you can see that set out in the budget as well.
The budget doesn't contain any extra money for the emissions reduction fund, and that money is due to run out, I think, fairly soon. What happens then?
Well, we are reassessing. We'll reassess our trajectory to meet the targets we agreed to in Paris next year. The important thing is a lot has changed in the climate change policy context, and the big watershed event was the Conference of the Parties in Paris last year, where all of the world's nations and all of the world's major economies in particular agreed to targets. And as you know, we've agreed to cut our emissions by 26 to 28% by 2030. That is a very substantial target because we have a strong and growing population. So in per capita terms, it's about 52%. So we are on track to meet that. But we will assess that, obviously, as the years go on, and we can adjust our policy settings in order to meet that if we feel they're not adequate. But at this stage, it is tracking very well. Greg Hunt is doing a very fine job with his combination of measures in ensuring that we meet that target. We're well ahead of our target for 2020, as you know.
And those, any adjustments you make, would still have direct action as the centrepiece of your policy?
Well, it is the direct action is a phrase which now probably has limited applicability. We have an emissions reduction fund, we have a renewable energy target, we have a clean energy finance corporation, we have a variety of measures, all of which are pulling in that direction of reducing our emissions. And of course, we have changes in our economy, improvements in technology, which are affecting that reduction in emissions as well.
In another area, one thing you don't have is a higher education policy at this point, and you've delayed changes to higher education for another year, 2018. Isn't this a real gap for a government that is so committed to innovation and a smart economy.
Well, Michelle, the delay in the introduction of the changes that were initially proposed, of course, by Christopher Pyne when he was Education Minister, is a recognition of the reality that they've not been able to achieve support in the Senate. Simon Birmingham is consulting about it, as you would expect. He's determined to achieve an outcome that ensures we can make the savings that we need to make in terms of our budget repair task, but also one that provides universities with greater flexibility and that provides an affordable cost of education for students. So Simon is working on that, and I think it is clear that the direction he's taking is one that is being welcomed and embraced by the sector. But he clearly will have more to say that and more to say about that in the course of the campaign.
The budget shows that government spending as a proportion of GDP is quite high by historical standards, 25.8 falling to 25.2 over the budget period. You've been relatively soft on cuts in this budget for obvious reasons, but doesn't that mean that voters might feel that if you're re-elected, next year's budget could be pretty harsh?
What voters will, I'm sure, understand that the steady, thoughtful economic management that has been demonstrated in the preparation and delivery of this economic plan will be carried out through the next 3 years if we are returned to government. This has been described as a sober, in some respects, a modest budget. Some people have said it's not exciting enough and that it's unusual for a budget prior to an election because it doesn't have lots of big giveaways and so forth. This is a different budget from what typical pre-election one, and you've seen, of course, many of them. This is part of a long-term economic plan to drive jobs and growth here for Australians over the long term.
So people shouldn't be afraid of next year's budget, is what I'm asking.
People should absolutely not. People should assume, and I'm sure they will assume, that the same steadiness that they've seen in this budget, in its careful preparation, in the way that it is fair and the way that it drives jobs and growth, it makes our tax make some tough decisions in relation to superannuation, to make our superannuation system more sustainable, to make it fairer and more flexible. And of course, they're seeing too the way in which we're focusing in an innovative way on some big social challenges, and the youth unemployment being one of the biggest. I mean, here is an opportunity to change a person's destiny when they're young, because as you know, when people get out, the longer they are unemployed, the harder it is for them to become employed. So that's why we want to break that cycle of unemployment and indeed ensure that people are employable as soon as possible. And the PATH program is a very considered and innovative way to do that.
Do you think that the size of government at the moment is still too big?
Well, I think it is. It is, Michelle. All of us would like government as a share of the economy to be certainly not to grow anymore. I think it is I think rather than looking at it in that general way, and I think our side of politics prefers government to be smaller. Labor prefers it to be bigger. But I think we're better off focusing on what government is doing and how it is doing it. And in particular, you see this with a lot of things the Labor Party talks about. They seek to constantly calibrate their response to issues simply by how much money they want to spend at them. Generally, money they don't have, or money that they're proposing to raise in taxes as yet to be disclosed, and borrowings to be made in the future. But what we're more focused on is the outcomes. So you can see that with our schools policy, you can see, yes, we are committing additional money to that with a higher assumed rate of indexation over the next 3 years. What that is doing, however, is going to be tied to getting the right educational outcomes. numeracy, literacy, ensuring that we're going to test kids when they come into school at five. When I say test is the wrong word. It's an assessment, obviously. But these are very little kids. And so this is a question of how they're going in terms of literacy, basic numeracy. And at that point, we'll require that. And at that point, schools and teachers will know who's doing well, who's doing average, and who's fallen behind. And at that point, then you can make the interventions that will have the most effect. But right across the board, we're focused on outcomes, on what government delivers. Labor measures everything in terms of how much government spends, and very often that spending is ineffective.
The whole question of delivery takes us to federalism, and the federalism paper seems to have disappeared, or at least not materialised yet. Is that still coming? Are you still looking at reviewing the federal system?
Well, the federation is, in a sense, constantly under review, and we've agreed to look at a number of areas at the last COAG. There really isn't. It's an organic process. Federation, as you know, it evolves, and what we're seeking to do is to make it more efficient. And we're working with the states to do that.
Just to end on a couple of general questions. When you came into Parliament, you were quite strong on the issue of campaign funding.
Mm.
Are you still interested in reform of that area?
Yes, I think in an ideal world, we would have limitations on campaign expenditure of the kind that I've canvassed in the past, where you had you limited donations to individuals who were on the electoral roll, and we had an annual cap. And I've certainly canvassed that in the past. There are some real constitutional problems with this, however. It is not a straightforward question because there are constitutional limitations on any parliament's ability to restrict anyone from spending money in an election campaign. And of course, you need to be able to somehow take into account the action of third parties. It might be corporations or industry associations, or indeed, very relevantly, trade unions. And you've seen the way in which trade unions run very expensive political campaigns. Look at the way the CFMEU and some other unions raged in a very aggressive campaign against the China-Australia Free Trade Agreement. And, you know, they will no doubt be very actively involved in the election. So finding an effective level playing field is a challenging one, and I'm sure it's one that Parliament will return to after the election.
And you'll be interested in returning?
Well, I'm very interested in the issue, I can assure you. But it is one that it's one that where there are real challenges, because if, for example, and this is the problems that New South Wales has faced, for example, if you make restrictions on the ability of individuals to donate money to political parties, but then there are no restrictions on what third parties can spend, then you can get into the sort of problems that we've seen. Perhaps, for example, in the United States. So it's a big and complex issue, and one that deserves closer attention.
Finally, the question of trust is one I think that's very important in Australian politics these days. We have a very cynical public; they don't hold politicians in much regard at all. How much do you think politicians are responsible for this collapse in trust, and what can they do about it? What do you think you, as a Prime Minister, need to do about it?
Well, I think the critical thing is to be very upfront about issues, to explain what the problems are, explain how you propose to resolve them. I think there is a gotcha culture in the media. And perhaps in the political discourse overall, where, for example, any change in policy is seen as a backflip or an admission of failure. That's why I think it is important, and I said this, you may recall, when I announced our innovation and science agenda. I said that all of these policies we're setting out are ones that we regard as the best solutions to the problems we have, to the problems and the objectives we want to address. But if any of them turn out to be inadequate, we will change them. If we identify better ways of achieving those objectives, then we will undertake them. I thought what Scott Morrison said about youth unemployment in the budget was a very good example of that. What Scott did there was, honestly, acknowledge that the measures that we've had, governments of both political persuasions have employed to date, have not done a good enough job, and then identified a new way of approaching it. And I think that's a much better approach. I think also the focus. That's really my point. I think it is being candid, and I think that political discourse is improved when people's remarks are taken at face value rather than distorted in the way they often are in the political debate. Sometimes the participants in the political debate become too concerned with the game of politics and lose sight of the substance. And the real issue is how do we, for us, in this, the budget week, the real issue is what are the policies that will deliver continued strong economic growth, continued strong job growth, what will enable us to navigate the somewhat turbulent waters of the global economy, what will enable us to take advantage of the extraordinary opportunities, unprecedented opportunities that are available to us. And that's those, and then of course, who is best able to do that? So the election will come down to this question. Who do Australians believe is best able to deliver the economic plan that will secure their future, secure their children and grandchildren great jobs, secure the strong economic growth that all of us need to ensure that we remain a prosperous, high-wage, first-world economy with a generous social welfare safety net? Now, we have that plan. We have that plan and we've laid it out. And that's what we'll be taking to the people on the election.
Malcolm Turnbull, thank you very much for talking with us today. Thank you to my producer, Pat Hutchins. That's all from the Conversations Politics podcast. We'll be back again with you soon.
Thanks, Michelle.